Thank you, Afshan. Actually, looking at the programme, I thought I had about another 10 minutes to decide what to say. Anyway, I'm very grateful to be here to share some thoughts with you. And I'm very grateful to see so many of you here, because this, your presence here, is a testament to what people like Mike Eamons and myself have always known about Gordon. Hugh McLaren, for those of you who know anything about Scottish tartans, I'm actually wearing a McLaren tartan tie. And this was given to me by one Gordon Skinner, who insisted that those of us who were indebted to Hugh McLaren, I won't tell you in what way we qualified for this tie, but over coffee or over a drink, perhaps I could tell you. Hugh McLaren was the inspiration for so many of us. And like so many things which happen in life, people come into your life and stay in your life, and your life has benefited from being with them. And you know, life is full of people that we meet and you feel drained. So there are those who take things from you, and you must know people yourself who come and spend some time with you. They feel better when you've gone, but you feel drained when they've gone. Now, Gordon was one of those people that we always felt refreshed by. And I'm sure that many of you here in this room are here today because he did alter your life and he gave you something which you may not have been able to get in many other ways. Now, Hugh McLaren was also a Glaswegian. Now, in this day and age, when people have to go through politically correct methods, ways of being shortlisted for jobs and so on, I suspect that people like Gordon and Mike and myself would never have made it. In those days, you would get a telephone call, in this case from one of Hugh McLaren's friends, a fellow professor in Glasgow. I've got this young lad who's very bright, he's looking for a job, will you take him? That was all it was, and it happened, and it worked. Couldn't do that now. You might have about 200 or 300 people applying for the same job, and for those you don't shortlist, then you have to give a reason which you can justify to the human resources department. But it did work, and those of us who went to here around about the same time, actually, that's how we arrived in Birmingham. I mean, I came down, my interview was in 1966. I had my membership at the Royal College. I was looking for some research to do. And my boss on Tyneside said, there's a job going. I've already spoken to the professor there. It's about this and that. I hadn't a clue what the topic was. Anyway, I came down here. I was late to the interview because took the mistake of driving across the north of England, across the Pennines, down through the M6, and I had no idea. I'd never been to Birmingham before except on one previous occasion, and somebody else drove me on that time. And we came and we had one interview, and that was it. You got the job. When can you start? So that was the beginning. Hugh McLaren was the catalyst to what was a golden era here in Birmingham in obstetrics and gynecology. Now, you see, that was probably a Christmas party. And we had many parties. On the left is Bob Shaw, who later became president of the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. David Burnett is second from the left. And you see wearing a very snazzy early 1970s sports jacket. Is David here? He's not. But I suspect, like the rest of us, he probably still has that, but can't get into it because they're free. Then there was Hugh, and then, of course, there was Gordon. And that was taken... we did like to party, as you can imagine, in those days. That was taken in Dublin Castle when we were there for a meeting. And that's me, believe it or not, on the left-hand side with my wife. Dennis Williams was another person who played a very great part in the lives of so many of us. He was the chief technician in Hugh McLaren's department, and he pulled all the strings. He was like a quartermaster. He knew what was happening with everybody. And Neil Dignan there, he went back as a professor to Dublin, and his research was in the field of infertility. So there were two main reasons why people came to Birmingham, to this department, to work, and that was research. In Hugh's case, his main interest was in the treatment of cervical cancer, and he spent his life with cervical cytology programs, trying to persuade medical directors of health, ministers for health, that women should have cervical smear tests. And do you know, it took until 1988 before screening for cervical cancer first came into the UK on a proper basis. And we've seen cervical cancer plummet over that period of time. So Gordon's initial experience was as a clinical registrar. He never liked clinical medicine, I have to say to you. Not because he didn't like the medical part, because he loved that and he was good at it, but he didn't like surgery. And he then went into research in the university in the field of herpes simplex, you know, the herpes virus, which causes cold sores on the mouth and in other places. And it was thought in about 1968 that herpes may be the cause of cervical cancer. And that was the first time anybody thought that, you know, perhaps it could be an infectious disease. And Gordon went and he did a very prestigious PhD in virology, and he found that there was, in fact, some link. But it wasn't the link that we were looking for. But nevertheless, he got a PhD, and he came back into clinical medicine, realized that clinical medicine was not really for him. He much preferred laboratory work and the medical aspects of medicine and gynecology. And, you know, in those days, Gordon was one of those people who went into medicine for the right reason. I need hardly tell you that he went into medicine because he wanted to make people better. He didn't work purely and simply on what a laboratory result showed, what a piece of paper showed. He would ask you, all of you, do you feel better on what I've given you? He said, well, I feel a little bit better, but I'm not quite as good as I'd like to be. He said, okay, well, this is what we'll do. And some of the people going into medicine today, in fact, I'd hazard a guess that many people going into medicine today do, in fact, make very, very fine doctors. There's excellent doctors coming through. But we have to ask the question, why do 1 in 3 new graduates in medicine leave medicine within 3 years? Did you know that? And that's because so many of them are in medicine because their parents tell them they have to be in medicine. Now, Gordon didn't fall into that category. And I'd like to think that people like myself and Mike Eamons, who will be speaking in just a minute, and all the others who came together, I see Sandy Buchan here, he didn't come into this field because he just wanted a good job and a 9-to-5. We didn't worry about European working time directives, which is destroying medical training today. No, this group, which met in that year, we all came together, we worked together, our families got on well together, and in a period of only 8 years, Hugh McLaren was responsible for this group and some others producing 7 MDs and 2 PhDs. And that has never been equaled in obstetric and gynecology in this city ever since that time. So that was Gordon's contribution. I say he never really was very keen on surgery, but he loved medicine. And thank goodness he made a decision to switch his work. And that's why you're here today, because he's done so much good. And I'd like to think at the end of the day that while we've lost a friend, and David, Neil and Fiona have lost a dad, mankind has lost a very fine doctor.